I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Today is Monday, October 2nd. I am your host, Mike Rocky, and I will soon be joined by my two co-hosts, Robert Vallejos and Sean Ennis.
I'm here. Can you hear me? I can hear you, yeah.
All right. And then we'll give a couple minutes for Robert to join us. But in the meantime, if you happen to have questions for us, feel free to call us. We'd love to hear from you. The number to call is 515-605-9345. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. And if you do want to be part of the show, please remember to press 1, and that will let us know that you want us to bring you on live. If you prefer to email the show, you can do that as well. The email address is mmalivecast@gmail.com. Again, it's mmalivecast@gmail.com. So while we wait for Robert to join us, Sean, let's just get started with this weekend's upcoming MMA events. First, on Friday night, we have Bellator 184, and then on Saturday night we have UFC 216. So let's start with UFC 216, kind of just run through the main card, give our thoughts on the fights as well as our prediction. So in the main event, we have Tony Ferguson taking on Kevin Lee for the interim lightweight title. I think last week when we talked, Robert and I were a little bit surprised that Kevin Lee was the opponent for Tony Ferguson in this one. I'm still expecting a halfway decent fight. It's not the interim title fight I was hoping to get. I see Tony Ferguson winning this one probably within the first three rounds. I'm going to go with Ferguson by TKO. Sean, how do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, I largely see it happening pretty much the same way. Tony Ferguson is on a tear right now and has been for a long time. I can't remember what his win streak is at the moment, but it's not insignificant. He's been rolling through everybody that he's been fighting, and I love the way that he looks in all of his fights. I think Kevin Lee is a good fighter. I like watching him. I like watching him fight. I think he's in for decent things at lightweight, but Ferguson's on another level right now from everybody. So I do think Ferguson is gonna take care of business against Kevin Lee.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. The only question I have, though, is where do they go from there? Because when you look at the rankings, Khabib already turned the fight down, which we just found out recently. Then you have Eddie Alvarez and Justin Gaethje, who are tied up with the Ultimate Fighter right now. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Barboza is still out with an injury, correct?
That is my understanding. I don't know for 100%, but that's the last I've heard.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I'm not really sure what his timetable is. Then at number 6, you have Nate Diaz, who I don't think the UFC even considered for this fight. And then you have Kevin Lee after that.
No.
And then you have Dustin Poirier. So when you look at who is available for this fight, I guess I can understand after Khabib turned the fight down that you would have to go with Kevin Lee. But still, to me, it's just a little underwhelming. Any final thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're pretty spot on there. You know, it'd be nice to see Ferguson fight Nurmagomedov if he ends up winning this fight. The question is, what's next for Conor McGregor? Whether he's going to end up fighting Nate Diaz in that trilogy fight that I don't know who wants to see, but apparently some people do. And if he's going to come back and defend the lightweight title. So, question marks still abound at that point.
Yeah. All right. So let's move along. So on the main event, we are both going with Tony Ferguson to take the interim lightweight title strap. In the co-main event, we have the fight that was supposed to happen at the previous UFC 215 pay-per-view. Demetrius Johnson taking on Ray Borg for Johnson's flyweight championship. I think we both know, well, don't know, but we'll predict that we see Johnson winning this one fairly easily. Again, I'm going to go with Johnson. I'm actually going to go with him in the later rounds. I see either a fourth or fifth round finish for this one. Sean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think he's going to make pretty quick work of Ray Borg. It's fine that Borg's getting the title fight, I guess. If he can make the weight, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But Johnson is far beyond anything that Borg has fought up to this point. And I don't think he's going to have much for DJ.
Yeah. So you see this one. You see this one. What, first, second round stoppage?
I think probably second or third, maybe. I mean, I don't know if Johnson is much of a first round stoppage kind of guy unless the opportunity really presents itself. But I think he's going to wear him down and get him out of there pretty quickly.
What's the what are the odds on Ray Borg making weight?
probably not quite as long as him winning the fight, but they're probably not one to one either.
All right, let's move on to the next fight where we have a nice battle of heavyweights with Fabricio Werdum going up against Derek Lewis. This is a tough one to call for me. I was kind of going back and forth when I was just kind of thinking about it over the last couple of days. I actually want to kind of sit down and really take a look at this fight a little bit further, but just off the top of my head, I want Derek Lewis to win the fight, so I'm going to go with Derek Lewis in this one. Which way are you going?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I'm rooting for Derek Lewis to win this fight. Unfortunately, I do think that, well, see, here's the thing. When you have Werdum fought Alistair Overeem in his last fight, and I figured that Werdum would win that fight. But, Overeem kind of controlled him and controlled the action on the feet. And I don't know. To me, Werdum seems like the obvious choice because he's more dangerous in at least on the ground, and Derek Lewis tends to get tired, and Werdum just doesn't have that kind of gas tank issues, as the same kind of gas tank issues that Derek Lewis has. So it would seem to me that Werdum would be the obvious pick here, but strange things happen when you get to be older. Werdum is 40 years old now, so I don't know. I think I still tend to lean towards Werdum to win the fight, but it would not surprise me at all if Derek Lewis could pull off the upset here.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I can see this one going either way. Robert, is that you joining us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, so we kind of covered the first – we covered the main event as well as the co-main event. So just to get you caught up here, do you want to give us your predictions on actually the first three fights of the card?
Okay, rapid fire style. I'll go Tony Ferguson in the lightweight title fight, Mighty Mouse in the flyweight fight, and then not with a ton of confidence, but I'll take Werdum in the heavyweight bout.
Yeah, Sean and I kind of said the same thing about that heavyweight fight where we can see it going both ways and wouldn't be surprised to see either guy win that fight. As far as the main event and the co-main event, how do you see those two getting finished?
I see maybe a late stoppage by Ferguson. I have a hard time grading to see if Lee is even on Ferguson's level. It did seem like he was fast-tracked into this fight. It's a good position. The UFC is in a good spot either way. I think with either of these guys winning, I think they probably prefer Kevin Lee to win because of the push they seem to be giving him. But I'll go late stoppage on both of the fights. Also on the Johnson Borg, I'll stick with my pick from last month. I don't think Mighty Mouse is the type of guy that having the you know, the build up, you know, the climax of a fight only to go back into training camp is going to affect him so much. And Ray Borg, who knows what his physical state is going to be? Who knows, you know, is he going to make weight? Is he going to make it to the fight? That's probably the question on everybody's mind. And if he does, what kind of condition will he be in?
Yeah, what would you give the odds on him making weight on that one?
I would say it's relatively good because you've got to believe this guy is.
There's no way he can make this mistake.
Right. He's got to be hyper focused on this. And he can't, if he does this again, I mean, we might be out of the UFC. You know, how about that? You have a title fight at one card and then you're cut the next day.
Right.
I mean, stranger things have happened. But I think it's going to happen. I think the result of whatever he has to do to make the weight probably won't bode for him too well in the fight. Not to mention he's fighting such a great fighter in Mighty Mouse.
Yeah. All right. And then finally, in the main card opener, we have Neil Dariush taking on Evan Dunham. Another tough fight. I can see this one going either way as well. But I think Dariush gets back in the win column on this one. I think this one's going to go to a decision. Robert, we'll start with you on the opener here.
Yeah, it's hard to get a feel for this one as well. I don't think it's going to be a particularly exciting fight. But I'm gonna say Dariush decision.
And Sean,
I'm gonna take Dunham here. Actually, I like both guys quite a bit, actually, and I think Dunham has more tools in the toolbox, and he'll be able to withstand a little bit more from Dariush, and I think he's gonna be able to get it done. And I do agree it's gonna be a decision, but I think he takes it 29-28. I like that for a detailed prediction.
I'm a little surprised that they put this as the main card opener because, like Robert alluded to, I think this is probably going to be probably the least exciting of the main card fights. How do you guys, Sean, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think the thing is for this fight, it's going to be more of a technical fight. It's not going to be, you know, your Edson Barboza, you know, action-packed. Well, of course, I shouldn't say Edson Barboza. Barboza is always action-packed, but you don't have the looming threat of a huge knockout coming with these guys. It's going to be more of a technical fight. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch for people that watch a lot of MMA, but it's not going to be one of those ones that, you know, you're calling your friend saying, you've got to order this pay-per-view so you can see the last round of this fight, you know. It's not going to be like that, but it should be a fun fight either way.
Yeah, I think it's still going to be a good card. I'm looking forward to it. So let's do this. Let's take an early break here, and then when we come back, we'll tackle the Bellator 184 card. Don't necessarily need to go through every fight on the main card, but maybe we'll just hit on the top two or three fights, and then we'll get into a couple of email questions as well.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
All right, guys, let's take a look at the Bellator 184 card that's going to be on Spike TV on Friday night. In the main event, we have Darian Caldwell taking on Eduardo Dantas for the Bellator Bantamweight title. I think this is going to be a good fight. I like both of these guys. This is the fight I've been looking forward to for quite some time in this Bantamweight division. I'm still going back and forth on this. Right now, I lean slightly towards Darian Caldwell. But don't hold me to that because that could change by Friday. Sean, I'll start with you on this one. Which way do you see it going?
Yeah, this is a tough one for me, too. I haven't seen a ton of Caldwell, but I've liked what I've seen from him. I think, you know, given what I've seen and given kind of the experience edge, I'd go with Dantas, but I wouldn't be surprised if Caldwell picks it up either.
Yeah, and Robert?
Yeah, I'd probably go with Dantas just because of, like Sean said, the experience level. And none of these guys really, you know, is a killer who's going to put the other guy away. So you never know how those fights can, you know, can turn out. But I'll take Dantas here.
All right, moving on to the co-main event. We have Daniel Strauss returning for the first time since losing his title to the other pit bull, Patricio Ferreri. And he'll be taking on...
Manuel Sanchez.
There you go, Manuel Sanchez. I'm sorry. Now, Sanchez has been in some really close fights lately, and I like him as a fighter. I'm a little down on Daniel Strauss after his last fight. I was really disappointed in how he looked in that one. So right away on paper, I thought I was going to go with Strauss, but I can see Sanchez pulling this one out. He tends to get in a lot of close fights. Reminds me a little bit of Benson Henderson, where he gets in these close fights and he just so happens to be on the winning side of a lot of them. Now, you know, I'd say that's probably going to change sooner rather than later, but I think he's going to pull this one out maybe by split decision. Robert, I'll start with you on this.
I instinctively, kind of like you said, want to take Strauss just because he's a higher profile fighter and a guy that we seem to know a lot about. Like you said, in that last fight, I mean, he just got dominated by that Pitbull brother. And it seemed like, you know, they were really building it up as this epic showdown between these two rivals in their rubber match. And it didn't look like much of a rivalry at all. And so, you know, it's hard to – I feel like we always use the Pitbull brothers as the measuring stick. If someone's good or not, you know, they're kind of that gatekeeper of Bellator. And it gets confusing because there's two of them who fight at similar weight classes. But I'll take Strauss here, but I wouldn't be betting any money on it, that's for sure.
Yeah, and Sean.
Yeah, this to me seems like one of those fights that's going to get to the last bell, and then it's going to say, well – everyone will be saying, well, it could go either way. You know, I think a lot of people are going to be saying, I haven't scored for Strauss or I haven't scored for Sanchez, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes the other way. I'm going to take Sanchez here, in a close decision, but again, wouldn't surprise me either way.
All right. And then let's hit one more here. Also on the main card, we have two longtime MMA veterans, meet when Pat Curran takes on John McCappa. And I use that name just because I think he's got three different names, so we'll just go with that one for tonight. this one I really don't have a good feel on. I like McCappa a lot. He lost his last fight, but that was a really tough fight for him. And I'm not sure how much Pat has left in the gas tank. I expect a close competitive fight, but I'm going to go with John McCappa on this one. Sean, I'll start with you. Which way do you see this one going?
Yeah, I'm going to take Curran here. I think he's got enough left to win this fight. I don't think he's got a ton of fights left in him, but I do think he's got enough to win here. You know, Teixeira, or whatever his name is going to be this weekend, has been in a lot of close fights as well. And this could be another close fight. It probably will be. I think Curran's going to pull it out here.
And Robert.
Yeah, I'll take Curran. It's interesting. Both of these guys are the same age, but it really feels like there's a huge experience difference between the two of them. But I just think Curran is the more skilled fighter. I think we're headed for a night of these competitive fights, like Sean was saying, where the scorecards are going to be difficult to decipher at the end of each one of these fights. No fight just seems like that barn burner where somebody's going to KO the other guy.
Right, I don't see many finishes coming out of the main card of the Bellator 184. Do either of you?
No.
Yeah, thought so. All right, let's move on to a couple email questions here, and actually one of them kind of leads to one of the topics that we wanted to discuss tonight. Kyle T. from Burbank, California, he asks, who should the UFC match Carlos Condit up with for his return fight? Thanks, guys. So yeah, we wanted to kind of touch on, you know, Carlos Condit finally deciding that he wants to come back and fight. He had tweeted at Sean Shelby stating he was looking to come back either in December or January. Considering the way pay-per-view buys have been down, the way their viewership has been down for some of these shows coming up. Personally, I'm a big fan of Condit's, and I know, Robert, you from kind of being from that area, you might have a little bit more info on this. But I'm seeing this, obviously, as a good thing for the UFC. I don't know, and this is where I want to get both of your opinions on this, where you think he fits in, but do you think he's someone who the UFC can get behind, you know, put the promotional machine behind him and really push his return fight? And do you think he can move the needle as far as pay-per-view buys go? So kind of a double, you know, kind of two questions here. Robert, I'll start with you. First, who do you think they should match him up with? And do you see Condit being someone that can make a difference in pay-per-view buys?
Well, on the matchup, I think now with RDA surging, it would kind of make sense to match the two of them up, especially if the title is going to be held up for a while. I think you can, if you're the UFC, you can sort of market it as RDA gets a win over a former interim champion in Condit. He's definitely title worthy. Personally, I would love to see the Condit Cerrone battle, but it'll never happen, obviously, because they're in the same camp. I think that's a dream that every MMA fan has gone to bed thinking about at night. As far as can they promote it? I don't think he can move the needle on pay-per-view, because I don't think his comeback would be this epic theme, because as much as everybody loves him, he's not necessarily like this storied fighter the way like a George St. Pierre is. So, you know, he's not this mythical figure in the sport. He's just kind of everybody's favorite fighter. I think really his marketability probably is better suited to like a UFC on Fox card, where I think they could really promote the heck out of that and really showcase him as, look, you get to see this guy for free that everybody loves. And you might not be able to see again. This could be his last fight. So I think the value of him might be more on the television side than the pay-per-view side, which is unfortunate because obviously they need help on the pay-per-view side.
Okay, interesting. Sean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm definitely with Robert as far as like a draw perspective. You know, there's so few guys that really move the needle as far as pay-per-view goes. And I don't think Carlos Condit is one of those guys that you can main event a pay-per-view with unless he's in a title fight and expect to really pull big numbers. He's one of those guys that you can throw on a card and, you know, and that's part of the draw. But he's like a lot of guys in the UFC where when you put them all together, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts as far as the drawing aspect goes. As far as who they should match him up with, man, there's so many good fights that he could have right now. I would be partial to a Robbie Lawler rematch, but if we're going to fight someone, if we want him to fight someone that he hasn't fought yet, I think RDA would be a great name to put him in there with, or Masvidal as well would be another one that would be pretty attractive.
Yeah, that was actually the fight I was thinking of too, was Masvidal. But I can also see Dos Anjos coming, you know, being a candidate for that return fight as well. Those, I think, would both be really good fights. I was kind of torn on it because I almost want to see Condit come back and look good. And if he got, you know, matched up against either of those two guys, especially Masvidal, I mean, he poses so many problems for his opponents. I think that would be a really tough fight for him. So, you know, I'd like for him to come out, look good, get a win, but I don't see that happening if he goes up against Masvidal. I think he can beat our RDA, but I think Masvidal would take that one. Which Sean, who do you think would win that fight if that was the matchup?
With Masvidal?
Yeah.
I would probably give the edge to Masvidal. But I think the thing is with Masvidal is you never know when he's going to use his ground game. And that seems to be Carlos Condit's weakness. Kind of his kryptonite is if guys can keep him down. And I think in a purely striking matchup, I think Condit would take that. But, if Masvidal were to really mix it up and try to get the fight to the ground and keep it there, you know, I don't know that he's going to tap Condit out, but, I also don't know that Condit's going to be able to get out from under him. So, you know, I think I would lean towards Condit, but with that kind of caveat.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's move on to our second question, which comes from Jesse, who's emailing from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. His question is, do you guys consider John Jones the best fighter of all time, considering everything we now know about him? Enjoying the show? Thanks. Robert, I'm going to throw this one to you first. That's a tough one.
I think we can, just because and it's the stupidest caveat ever, but if we're going to – are we going to put Anderson Silva above him? So then we're going to also have a guy who's got a history of PEDs, you know, in his thing. Are we going to go all the way back to the SEG era and put some of those guys in who probably were all tainted? So it's kind of hard to say that his PED use excludes him from being considered the greatest of all time, because I feel like whoever we would put in that position, there's always going to be that suspicion. Now, as far as was he a good steward to the sport and to the position he was put in, because he kept himself so inactive through all of his various, you know, outside of the cage activities, I think maybe then you can detract from him being the greatest of all time. But I mean, and I'm giving a very non-answer here because it's hard to say whether he is or isn't and what his legacy will be. But I just don't think that his PED use necessarily disqualifies him from being the greatest of all time. But if that's your position, it's definitely a fair position.
And like you said, I mean, we don't even know if his career is even over yet, you know, really. So I'd be interested in kind of, you know, seeing it play out. I mean, yeah, I mean, we're looking at a long suspension. But he can still come back and I think still be the best fighter in his weight class. Sean, what do you think? How would you answer this one?
Yeah, I think Rob gave the perfect answer, honestly. You know, from a skill perspective, if it's not John Jones, then who is it? You know, John Jones, if you look at his history outside of the Alexander Gustafsson fight, was never even really challenged. And even in the Gustafsson fight, I think that fight was pretty decisive in Jones's favor, even though he, had to work to actually get the decision there. But I don't know who you would put ahead of him if it's not Jones. Maybe Fedor, but at the same time, with Jones still in his prime, we haven't seen what time would bring. So it's kind of hard to put that in a huge historical perspective. But at the same time, he's never lost, you know, outside of the Hamill fight, which was stupid. And as far as skill and as far as the gulf between him and the next one down, I don't think we've seen anything like that. So, yeah, I would say that, yes, he is the best ever.
All right, let's take our second break here. And then when we come back, we do have a caller on hold. And then we will play another round of Fact or Fiction.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
You are on. State your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys. It's Rick from Alaska. How are you doing today?
Rick? Thanks for calling.
Hey, Rick.
What's on your mind tonight?
Hey. Well, Ed, this is fine. You mentioned the John Jones loss, you know, the elbow fight. And that reminded me, you know, we should really start a petition to get Steve Mazzagatti back, because that guy made things interesting. You know, I really, every time he was rapping, I paid attention. You know, he added an element. Maybe not give him the main event. He could just do the fight past prelims. But I, for one, would watch every fight he would referee, because that guy brought some serious entertainment. I mean, that time Brock Lesnar had a top like six times in his professional, in his USA debut against Frank Mir, and Mazzagatti still didn't break it up, or doing the John Jones loss, like, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame of refs. I miss him. But what I was going to say real fast is, Robert, I read your article about the history of the interim titles, and that was really interesting. And I was going to ask you guys if you think that one of the fights you mentioned was Carlos Condon Diaz, and I forgot that fight even happened, to be honest. And it'd be interesting to see how that fight would do now with Condon and Diaz, where they're at now, as compared to where they were, you know?
Yeah, I think that fight mostly plays out pretty much the same way. I don't know that either of, you know, we're talking about Nick Diaz, right? That's who he fought. I'm assuming it's we're talking about Nick, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that fight pretty much plays out the same way. You know, Nick Diaz he fights like Nick Diaz, and Carlos Condit fights like Carlos Condit. So I don't know that given the aspect of time, that goes much differently than it did the first time.
Yeah, I can see that. I wonder how the pay-per-view buys would be. I mean, if Nick Diaz ever comes back, and if Carlos Condit ever comes back, at this point, I feel like in Robert's article, he said that not a lot of outside fans knew who they were, but I feel like their mainstream appeal would be bigger now. So it'd be kind of like one of those almost like legend fights that we have in wrestling sometimes, where these two guys who've been in retirement come back. It'd just be pay-per-view wise buys. It'd be interesting to pull that back. If I were to do a list of rematches I would like to see, that would be kind of top on the list right there. And the trilogy fight I'd like to see is Weidman versus Silva. Again, I know I'm a minority there. But anyways, that's pretty much it. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for calling again, Rick. Robert, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I think he summed it up. I'll be like Sean. I don't like quoting myself, but like I said in the article, that they're both – both guys might be done fighting, but they're much more marketable now than when they fought before. So I think that'd be a heck of a main event. Like I said, again, on a UFC on Fox card, Diaz and Condit. But I think Rick from Alaska is going to be on the island out of the own line to see Weidman Silva 3.
Yeah, I'm not aching to see that fight either. So, all right, guys, let's transition here into another round of Fact or Fiction. I will make a statement, and both of you guys will decide if that statement is fact or fiction. Let's start with this one. The UFC's rankings do not matter when it comes to deciding who gets title fights. Sean, is that fact or fiction?
That is a fact, and I'll factor a little bit in here saying that it doesn't matter much. When it comes to making the title fights, they're gonna book the title fight that's gonna make the most money, or they think is gonna make the most money, where they can reasonably book a guy that is that's ranked close enough to the top where it's not just ridiculous. But other than that, it does not matter.
And Robert,
I'll say fact, and just as evidence, we have Kevin Lee competing for a theoretical golden ticket to face Conor McGregor on Saturday. So that pretty much tells you everything you need to know about how serious they are about the rankings.
Yeah, and you can use the rankings. They're almost like statistics. You know, you can use them to justify just about anything you want. Just whatever side of the fence you're on, you can spin those stats or rankings, you know, to either bolster your argument or, in fact, you know, if you had a counter argument, you know, you can use them that way as well. So I would agree with both of you on that one, that I think it is fact. Moving on to the next one. Daniel Cormier's next fight should be at heavyweight. Robert, fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction just because he is he's the champ of his division, and I'm generally an absolutist on champs of their division should, for the most part, stay within their division.
Okay. And Sean?
I'm going to say fact. I think the only reason that Daniel Cormier even moved to light heavyweight was because of Cain Velasquez being the champion at the time. He has completely beaten everyone that matters at light heavyweight. All apologies to Volkan Ozdemir. And I don't think he has anything left to prove at 205, but I think he has a lot to that he could add to his legacy if he were to fight again at heavyweight.
Yeah, I agree with Sean on this one. I think his next fight should be at heavyweight for the exact same reasons that Sean just pointed out. So, all right, let's move on here. Conor McGregor will fight in 2017. Sean, start with you on that one. Fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fact, and that's a complete 180 on what I thought before the Mayweather fight. But just based on the kind of things that McGregor's been saying, he's kind of been hinting at fighting again in the semi-near future. The UFC obviously is going to be looking for a big fight on New Year's Eve or around that time. I think he fights this year. Now, that the caveat being, if the UFC schedules their end-of-year card in the beginning of January, then maybe I'll go with fiction. But I'm going to say right around that time is when McGregor's going to fight again, whether it's Nate Diaz, which hopefully it's not, or whether it is Tony Ferguson and Kevin Lee winner.
And Robert?
I'm going to say fact, and I know that, like, Kavanaugh and these guys have been saying he's not going to fight at the end of the year, but part of McGregor's deal is always – he always gets the deal done at, like, the 11th hour. whenever he's most in demand. So I have a feeling we'll be, you know, as the time gets closer and we'll have a main event for that card, suddenly, you know, his name will pop up.
And didn't Dana White come out and publicly say that that fight was definitely not happening?
Yeah, yeah, so book it.
Yeah, so that's
happening. What I mean. Is happening. So, you know, so basically, it's going to happen, right?
Yeah, put it in your calendars, just pencil it in right now.
Right. In fact, use a pen if you want to. All right, moving along. Stipe Miocic will defend his title before Max Holloway does. Robert, start with you on that one. Fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction because while both guys seem to have contract issues, Stipe has gone on for a long time, and I think the heels are dug in. And I think Holloway probably wants to fight sooner, even though he's unhappy with his current situation.
Sean, what do you think? Fact or fiction?
I agree. I'm going to say fiction. I think contract issues, even aside, if they were both in good contract status, Miocic doesn't really have a ready-made opponent right now. He was going to fight John Jones, or at least that was the rumor. That's out the window, obviously. Probably the next one down will be the winner of Ngannou and Overeem. If it's Ngannou, if it's Overeem, who even knows who's going to fight next? And I think Max Holloway has a ready-made matchup with Frankie Edgar. Ready to roll. And so, yeah, I'm going to go with fiction.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I'm going to go with fiction on that one, too, because, like you said, Holloway does have more than one challenger lined up where, Stipe has a little bit, I can see Ngannou. I would hate to see the winner of this weekend's heavyweight fight. I really don't want to see either one of those guys in a title fight. With just the state that the heavyweight division is, I would agree with you by saying that's fiction. So let's jump into a little bit of wrestling factor fiction. Start with the first one here, which is AJ Styles is the best wrestler on the WWE main roster. Sean, what say you, fact or fiction?
I say fact, and he's also positioned to look as the best wrestler on the roster right now. You can give it to Finn Balor, you can give it to one of the other guys, but AJ Styles is in a showcase position. He's basically the face of SmackDown, and he continues to have awesome matches time and time again, and he is the man. So, yeah, fact.
And Robert, fact or fiction?
I'll say conditionally fact because, you know, if you line them all up together, he's clearly head and shoulders above everybody else on that roster. But he hasn't been doing anything that exciting for, like, the last 2 months. So I think, you know, it's hard to say, like, yes, for sure, he is the best wrestler. But if I had to pick a wrestler that I wanted to see have a match that's on that roster, it's going to be AJ.
Yeah, and Sean, you mentioned that he's positioned as the best wrestler on the roster. Holding the U.S. title, you think that still positions him the best possible way?
Well, no. I don't think he's positioned as well as he could be. He should be the champion right now and just be positioned in that way. But I think he is showcased in a way that kind of elevates the U.S. title, which is not something that everybody could do.
Right.
But like I said, he's been kind of laying low for the last little while, but overall, I think he is positioned the best out of, you know, to look the best out of all the current baby faces on at least on SmackDown, and I would say on the roster as a whole.
Yeah, and I think
besides Roman Reigns, obviously, but you know,
I think Sunday's show will tell us a lot too, because I think it's time that they probably should have done this a year or two ago by making Styles the centerpiece of SmackDown. So I'd be curious to see if he drops the title on Sunday, which I can see happening, him dropping it to Corbin. And then regardless of who wins I can see him facing either Jinder Mahal or Shinsuke for the title. So I think a lot will tell us which direction they're going on Sunday. So we will see. Moving on here, WWE made a bad decision by going after the Young Bucks. Robert, what do you think? Fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction because they do what they do, and the Young Bucks have benefited off of this with the merchandise they've come out with, and it just emboldens that, like, anti-WWE current that really love the Young Bucks. And so it's not like they're going to sign him anytime soon anyway. So I don't think – and nobody was really harmed by the situation.
Sean, fact or fiction?
Yeah, I'm with Rob on this one. I think it hurts no one. It actually helps the Bucks because it moves them on to something else. You know, they said themselves they're moving on to something else. And in the meantime, they get to sell some cease and desist shirts.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I think that's fiction as well. Sticking with bad decisions, WWE made a bad decision by having Brock Lesnar pin Braun Strowman clean at No Mercy. Sean, start with you. Fact or fiction?
Fiction. I think it was the right decision. I think the questionable decision was to have him pin Strowman after one F5. But the overall choice to have Lesnar go over clean, I think, was the right one.
And Robert, is that fact or fiction?
Yeah, it's fiction. Lesnar winning clean is not an issue. Just the unimaginative way of how they got there was the problem that I think everybody had with it.
You guys are both wrong. That's fact. And the reason that's a fact is because they should have kept Strowman strong, and they should have progressed this feud into WrestleMania and ditched the whole Roman Reigns feud with Lesnar. That's probably going to be planned. So, yeah, wishful thinking on my part, and I'm fantasy booking, but I'm sticking with it.
I mean, if we're talking about overall philosophy, you know, if we take Roman Reigns out of the picture, then yeah, you know, that you always had the specter of Reigns hanging over everything. So, you know, taking that into account.
True. Sticking with Roman Reigns here, a Shield reunion will finally get Roman Reigns over with the crowd. Robert, fact or fiction?
Fiction. The Shield reunion will get the Shield over with the crowd. Roman's babyface push is completely independent of the Shield and how the fans feel about him.
And Sean?
100% fiction. He will never get over as a babyface until he turns heel. Ever. It will never happen, ever.
All right, you guys are both right for everything you just said. And let's wrap it up with one more UFC statement. Since Johnny Hendricks made the news today by switching camps to Jackson Wink, the UFC will cut Johnny Hendricks if he loses at UFC 217. Sean, is that fact or fiction?
Ooh, how many losses does he have in a row now?
I think he's on a 4-fight skid.
I think you're right. I knew it was 3 or 4. I can't remember exactly which, but either way, I think it's fiction. I don't think they're going to cut Johnny Hendricks. He, you know, maybe if he loses another one after 217, I don't think they cut him just yet though. Well, depending on what he looks like, if he goes out there and looks terrible, then yeah, I could see it happening, but I don't think they cut him out of hand.
And Robert, fact or fiction?
Well, just for the record, he's actually only on a 1-fight losing streak. He beat Hector Lombard back in February.
Oh, that's right.
So he's 1-4.
Yeah, so okay. Give the man his credit. I'm going to say that they don't cut him just because he's a guy that they continuously, despite all the issues they have with him, they continuously book, so they see some value in him. So I don't think they're going to cut him. Unless, of course, he doesn't make weight. Then maybe the discussion really needs to happen. And yeah, he's going over to Jackson, who does a great job of managing Ray Borg's weight. So I don't know how well it's really going to work out for him.
Maybe they'll put him in a title fight if he misses weight.
Yeah, I think it's fixed.
For what, the catchweight title?
Yeah, like you know, just like Ray Borg, they put him in a title fight if he misses weight.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with fiction as well, but it's I'm not positive on that one because, like you said, if he misses weight and if he just does not look good, which I don't expect him to win that fight, I won't be surprised if they cut him. But I think he still has maybe another fight or two left after that, so. We'll see with that. So, all right, guys, with that, we have to wrap this one up. But before we go, Robert, if you want to go ahead and give our listeners info on how they can follow you and anything else that you want to add.
Sure. Follow me on Twitter at Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. I had a column going up late last week where I looked at interim title fights over the last 10 years and how well they've drawn on pay-per-view. And I should have something later in the week, kind of looking at the television landscape with the UFC's negotiating window with Fox coming to an end, and kind of looking at how the UFC would fit on networks other than Fox.
All right, looking forward to that. And yet, for our listeners who haven't read that in his last Media and Business column, I highly recommend it. It's a good read. And Sean?
I'm at Sean Ennis on Twitter. That's S-H-A-W-N-E-N-N-I-S. Not too much going on with me as far as the site goes, but hopefully I'll be able to get something up here sooner rather than later. In the meantime, I will use my time here to also promote Rob's column. Right. Go read it.
Rob appreciates that.
Thanks, Sean.
And you can follow me on Twitter at FightChampBlog. And as always, you can read my columns at MMAtorch.com. So for Sean and Robert, my name is Mike Rocky, and we'll be back next week for another episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, The retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is